Mr. James, reel 10. Right, Mr. James, Cadbrick still. So, really, here it was more of teaching you to be an instructor yourself. But earlier you said that Cadbrick is where you're introduced to the to radio for the first time.
That's right, the number 18 sets.
Mm-hmm. And what was that?
They were sets that had their own procedure. They were strapped, you carried it on your back. It must have weighed like a sword carrying. It was large enough.
About
it was as big as a large pack.
Mm-hmm.
It was as big as a large pack. And it was about a foot deep, about 18 inches or 2 feet high. And it was quite a bulky little radio that you had on your back. But that was for communications between battalion and brigade, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you had officers from the Royal Artillery attached to the units, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He was the full FOO, the full organization officer, and he would have a chat with the number 87 to send messages back about the location of the enemy and draw fire.
So within the battalion, would each rifle company have its own number 18 set, or
yes, with the station there was eventually an establishment for the Cadbrick of a G1098 for so many number 18 sets per battalion.
And what's G1098? What's
well,
that?
G1098 is read as that big manila book. Anyway, every store item that is used in the British Army, according to the infantry battalion, had their laid down war office establishment.
So there's a laid out number of everything,
right,
rifles.
That's right. And that was part of the G1098 for the battalion.
Mm-hmm.
So, as far as I can remember, as I said, the signal storeman, back then Braithwaite, he would keep these things in his store. But when they were wanted, he would issue them. And then, when they were out of use, they would go back to him. You know, they were delicate instruments.
Mm-hmm.
They had valves which could become dislodged.
Mm-hmm.
If you're shaking them out and crawling in the ground, and, you know, sometimes that happened.
Were they reliable?
No, they were not. They were forever breaking down, and you had to have a damn good man with a knowledge of radio to see to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was lucky I had a birth weight.
Mm-hmm. And at Cadbrick, you're in the classroom, obviously, for a lot of the time getting lectures,
yeah.
But did you get out on manoeuvres and use these machines in simulated?
Yes, we did. We had, but not very far, because we were already in the
Could you talk us through just one particular exercise where you would go out with your equipment?
Well, it was merely...
That's Cadbrick, when you were being taught.
It was merely an exercise on carrying the number 18 set yourself and of operating it, and knowing what to do as you got to learn to work that machine, knowing which button to press and what to do to sort of get through. You know your wavelengths, you got a set of wavelengths, you had wavelengths. In those days, you're in communication with the pickup truck. The pickup, the signals officer, had you very clever to put a sort of a long aerial of his own design attached to his pickup vehicle, and that would sort of be run on the mouth. It would sort of sway on a ball, pivot, it would come back and swing back.
Mm-hmm.
But you had to sort of be very clever indeed in putting aerials on things so that you could receive an operating set.
And how long would that would be a wire aerial?
It was a sort of
like a telescope.
A telescopic thing.
Mm-hmm.
that you were acquiring somewhere on there, or you would have. There were all sorts of wonderful things.
And how long would it?
Wire.
How long would it be?
Well, I remember that Ehrlich's pickup truck had one about 6 foot tall,
mm-hmm.
coming up from his pickup, and you know everybody noticed it. Oh, that's a big box of pickup. Mm-hmm. And it was aerial, you see.
Mm-hmm.
But he was clever himself.
Mm-hmm.
So
at Cadbrick, it would be, would there be kind of, would you be learning like advanced kind of chords, advanced Morse, would there be any kind of development of what you'd already learned.
No,
can you describe?
You would go through your initial training as a signaller again from A to Z. Mm-hmm. All the time there were small modifications, small new things creeping in, mm-hmm. all the time. Then there was a time when messages had to sort of go in, not as clear messages, but in five lettered codes, as at this marvelous place they had with the Enigma thing in Bletchley. So that there were codes, you didn't know what the signal of the codes were, but a colonel would have his code. He would give you this mysterious sort of message pad. Each one had a little sort of slot with lines, so that you had five letters in each. Those were message pads. You just show you that X B C I J. What the hell is that? You've got to send it, and you've got to send it correctly.
And you wouldn't know what that.
You wouldn't know what.
So, in a future action, if you were captured, you wouldn't have a clue what the messages were that you were sending.
No. Yeah. They wouldn't know.
Yeah.
Unless the enemy knew or overrun the battalion headquarters. Mm.
In terms of the messages that you would be sending, would it be predominant, you know, in a kind of exercise, you know, let's, you know, stay in England for the time, in an exercise, would it be predominantly voice or would it be predominantly Morse? On the telephone, would it be?
Yeah, it would sometimes be Morse for training purposes and for secrecy. And sometimes in code as well, in Morse. Mm. But usually it was... line telegraphy, LT was line telegraphy, and then there was speech. And so sometimes you had speech, you had to refer to line telegraphy. You had your own earth return, you had 2 miles from one dom five to another dom five in the company, 2 terminals. And if you had your wires on your positive and negative terminal, going to the other, you were really private. But if you had one wire going from your forward or your dog five to the other company, you could have another short wire going into the ground on a spike. And believe it or not, you'd have the earth return, you see. Your second wire, same wire, well, you'd have messages going under the earth, miraculously, earth return. To get a good earth return and do your short wire, you have one wire going from one company machine to the next one, and you have a short wire on a pin going into the earth, and to give that earth return and to make it better, you would pee on it and make it very wet, and you would suddenly have loud and clear. Now, but earth return, of course, was not private. There was no secrecy. At the end, you could pick it up.
So this was a signal actually going through the ground without a wire.
That's right. From one line to another, you had one wire only to one terminal, and the second one was earth return. And it was, doesn't matter how far away you were, amazingly, the earth return. Mm-hmm.
What would be the most common messages... You, during the exercises, obviously, you'd be doing this over and over. What would be the most common messages that you would be sending or receiving? What would be the standard thing? What would an officer, a commanding officer, or whoever's in charge of a particular, what would they be asking? What would they be sending?
Well, in battle, there'd be urgent messages from one company commander to another, you know, even in battle.
What would those messages be, though? Where?
If something was on your right flank, you know, you'd want to know, are you there, Joby? Joby wouldn't be answering. Where the hell are you? You know, and Joby or whatever, if you're being attacked, you wouldn't say, you know, that you're being attacked. And so on and so forth, and there were messages of progress or battle progress.
And they'd all have to be linked to map references.
That's right. And all features.
So would that be part of your training? Would the map reading would be able to help?
Oh, absolutely. Map reading and compass reading. That was a great priority. And everybody at home laughs. And the signal is, this is that of Durham. Mm-hmm. And Kitterman. And as I said, this is an ordinance of England and Wales Army. This is proper English. This is Second War Revised of 1940. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Second War Revised 1940. This was actually issued in 1942, I think you'll find. Now, this is what I've always kept.
And this is from your
what? This is an army map. And so you'd have the top you'd have the top number, and you'd have the reference down there, you see, so that you could sort of pass messages according to the grids.
And so you'd be working with maps as well as all the time.
Absolutely, you would know. And so we, in the secret, obviously, we were. But I was going to say to you that Seabed Montefiore.
Oh, we'll get on to that when we. So map work was very important.
Absolutely very important.
And would there be special classes at Cadbury in map reading?
You had to be able to know where you were, and on a map referendum, every junior NCO was supposed to do it. You know, and every private soldier was supposed to know how you are taught map reading, and also. You were issued the compass as well. Mm-hmm. And you had to know how to use the compass as well. So map references were a very frequent message. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, during this time at Cadbury, did you have any other duties? Were you put on guard duties? Did you have any?
No, it was an intensive instructional course. It was a course of teaching and learning, and there wasn't a minute wasted. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a second wasted. It was done. It was so concentrated. It was a wonderful course. You had to be fit. You had to be alert and on your best behaviour. You had to have a clear brain. Because it's no good on the bear, and the next day having gone from the class to give a lecture, and in your own way, and produce your own clever introduction,
Did some of you actually go on the bear though? Did you experience much of the nightlife?
All of the types who thought that they would go into Darlington and get sloshed. You're foolish if you had a thick head. You had to be A1, raise the sound in the brain. Mm-hmm.
What kind of place was Darlington at that time?
Darlington was a wartime major blackout, and it was military. Catholic camp was not very far from it. And Yorkshire itself was sort of a military place, it was full of people of all arms of the service and from all nationalities there, when I was there. And the black camp was very, very black. In fact, I bumped into a lamppost and hurt my head on one evening when I was there, I remember particularly. I only had one pint as well. I'd been in this pub called The Hole in the Wall, and I've never forgotten that pub. I've never been back to Darlington since, but if ever I do go back there, I'm going to find out where that pub was, because that was where everybody seemed to concentrate for jollity and booze and women.
Mm-hmm. would there be like sing songs, or how would a night out go in Darlington?
No, there'd be a crowded pub. Drinking beer, ATS, WAFs, officers, NCOs, red caps, and it was a very, very popular place. Everybody who was in Catholic went there.
See, it was the place to go to. Were there any officers-only sergeants? Was there any of that going on at that stage in Darlington? Were there any places that were out of bounds?
I didn't know. I didn't. I wasn't. To be honest with you, I think that 3 months. I think I went there twice.
Yeah.
Myself, because I had to do my writing up at night, and I had to sort of having sat in school during the day, I had to do my homework. Mm-hmm. It was had to be done the next morning. Mm-hmm. So I went into the Dalek at about twice. It wasn't being strict. It was I just got for the experience. And I met one bloke there that I went to school with, and I never forgot that. His name is Edwin Williams, and he went to my elementary school before I went to the grammar school in Wales, and I met him there.
Mm-hmm. And what unit was he with?
Oh, we had a good drink, actually. Edwin, and but poor chap, he died in the war. He didn't get killed, he died.
Can you remember what unit he was with, or what he was attached to?
Yeah. I can't remember, but I went to school with him, and I met him in the fall of the war. And you know, that's how I remember. I think of Darwin, I think of Edwin Williams, who didn't last the war.
What about the locals? Did you have any much contact with the local people?
No, not in Darwin. No, you were in a marvelous crowd, with a marvelous crowd in the school of the signals, because after all, every one of us, you know, was straight to each other. We were all anxious to sort of chum up and chat.
And you were the only DLI, 16 DLI man there.
I was.
Can you remember any of your friends that besides the lad you went to school with? Did you strike up any friendships at that stage that lasted?
For the duration of the time we were there, we chummed up and we sort of got friendlier and friendlier as time went on, and we said, well, we'll see you again sometime, you know. Mm-hmm. No, but we had, I remember, conversations in the mess sometimes in the night when we had the time and done your homework. But it was really, usually, it was work.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier the sergeant's mess and how nice that was, and how nice the food was. Would you have felt, compared to being a private soldier, did you feel it was like a step up in the world in terms of how you were treated in the army?
First class fare. Mm-hmm. They had, they must have had the cream of the ACC catering there. Mm-hmm. The food for all these chaps and course, and the mess it was fantastic.
Yeah, we're talking about the mess in Catrick.
It was well run. It was first class. The food was of the very best quality, and this was in 1940, you know. And it was at the time that were during the period. It happened when I was there, as far as I can remember. I'm quite certain I was there at the tail end of the course when Coventry was Coventrated. Mm-hmm. It was destroyed. And I was there then. I was in Patrick when that happened. Mm. And I remember that. And then there were the food was first class, and the cleanliness and the service and everything was wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Now,
great if you live.
Now, so you did the course. When did the course end? About what time?
Well, it ended after about 12 weeks in area.
So what date was that? What
as far as I remember, it was from November to January, and beginning of January I had to go back to my battalion, and I was informed that my battalion had moved from Dalkeith down to East Anglia. And so I was getting warrant to go to join the battalion down south from Catrick.
Did you notice any changes in the 3 months you'd been away?
Yes, there were changes in becoming commander for a start.
And who was that?
And when I came back, he was Major Sholto Ollison, who was aware of the Signal Sergeant being away and was very pleased to meet me on my return. And he said, I can detect the red shacks, but I'm going to call you Cathy. And he was a very friendly chap, and you know, and I thought, well, he was very friendly. He was a remarkable man, in my own opinion, because, and he must be very, very wealthy, because he had a battle dress made privately by his own Savile Row tailor, obviously, or the finest gabardine, you know. He had his best suit on all the time, and he was an extraordinary man. Smoked a pipe, and very alert. And you looked at him and you could see his eyes were like an owl's eyes, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And anyway, you think, what about me? So he said, I see you into a grammar school, Taffy. I said, yes, sir. He said, well, your signalling course, he said, results come through. He says, that is excellent. He said, but he said, it's going to do you no good because I'm losing the CQMS here. And he's joining the Indian Army. He's going to take a commission in the Indian Army, and I want a new CQMS. And he says, and you're a good bloke? For it. Oh, I said, I love signaling, sir. Don't be back with me. I said, I'd love it. I'd use my motorbike. I said, have you done a course? Good results and all sort of thing. And this was after, incidentally, after we had done the exercise. We did a bumper, called bumper. Mm-hmm. I said, I've been acting for this officer.
Well, let's talk about bumper before we get on to that.
Well, that was a separate. And that's where I remember, you see, Lieutenant Colonel Sebag Montefiore was the CEO.
So you think Sebag Montefiore was around at that time?
Well,
Italian history says it was somebody else.
He said to me, and he said, Sergeant, he said, Lieutenant Gerling, as soon as I came back, went to Catholic for his officer's training course.
Who took over while you were away then?
He was there. Lieutenant Gerling.
Yeah.
And Tom Baker. And Corporal Wells. And a chap called Lance Corporal Howe, who married this girl in Dunfermline. And then later a corporal came from Branstow, Corporal Billington. And then there was another tall corporal with a boyish face and glasses from Branstow. And all the time we were getting fairly more DNI signals from Branstow as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they actually came in from the 6th Platoon. But Lieutenant Colonel Sebag Montefiore sent for me in Thetford. And he said, you are going to be my signals officer on the exercise. And he didn't say anything to do with anything. So he said, you'll have your motorbike. And he says, and I want you to be naturally very close to ground headquarters and to me as signals officer. So my God, I'm going to fulfill this. Well, you know, I got myself, but I did. We set off, effective in the early morning as a battalion, on this exercise called Bumpa. And I had a motorbike, and I was going to be the signals officer. And we went out, and I had my signalers all allocated to companies, and they were all out. And the object of the exercise was on the move. Moving quickly from one place to another as a battalion, you know, situations quickly changing, companies set up, lines reeled out, suddenly packing up, we're moving in 1 hour, all the lines had to be reeled in, the signals had to be, you know, they had no time for. And then one night during a storm, we had a terrible, terrible storm. And the companies were in position in battle, and the signals were out. And Colonel Montefiore went and cut the lines between each company. All companies had cut lines. They cut them with his cutters. This is part of his test, you see. And of course, the signalers could be in touch with each other and realize the cut line, no communication, line dead. Out would go two chaps in the dark, going from one country to another, feeling the line, found it. Right. Pinned down a rein, bearing the compound, bearing the wires, tying a reef knot, a temporary reef knot, put some insulation around it, give it a temporary. Tight, pull it, join, in touch again. Well, he timed every time he cut the line, and he timed the connections, and he had all the results. And the singer was the first class, and at the end of the exercise, he had all the officers in his officer's mess, and they were having a post-mortem. And he was telling them all that they went wrong. But he had a glowing report for the signals officer, who did a first-class job as a signals officer. Nothing went amiss. Everything was perfect. I cut the lines at sort of time. They were there, and on the back and hailed us. And they all looked at me, and I thought, my God, Sergeant James, signals officer, on this big exercise, carried off the role. I had praise from Lieutenant Colonel Supermonitore. Now, during that exercise, and I remember particularly, I was with him. Secretary, because he realised that so many lines had been repaired, but he said to me, and I had to join him. And he said, well done. He said, I've done this. And then he saw Sarge disturbed. He said, Sarge, just a moment here. Where are we? We'll get quite down here. There we are. There, sir? There? We are miles away from there, Sergeant. Yes, sir? No, you don't know, do you? No, sir. Well, that's not much good, is it, Sergeant? And he's a bit cheeky. He says, no, sir, not a bit of good, is it, sir? So he said, right. Can you read a compass? No, sir. But what do you do with three stripes? He said, I'm going to see the demon at least at times. Go away. And he was busted. And by the corporal. Poor Harry Stern was caught up by Lieutenant Colonel Sebel Montefiore. Mm-hmm. And I've never forgotten that. He couldn't read the map.
Mm-hmm. Now, Exercise Bumper, that was a big, it was like a divisional exercise, I think.
Well, it was a big exercise, and it lasted several days. And
you remember whether the DLI was part of, was obviously some kind of scheme, whether you were the attacking force or the defending force?
At the time I had all the paper, and I was a signals officer as well, they had the whole thing, but of course, you know, these things, that is a long time ago, but I don't really remember anyway. And it lasted several days, and the other reason for it was to test our endurance, because we didn't have any sleep for about 3 or 4 days. And nobody was allowed to have any sleep for 3 or 4 days, and I remember particularly that we were all knackered. And the time came, the end of the exercise came, and we were told, the exercise is over. The battalion were now march down this road, where a half a mile down the road, on the right hand side, the Duke of Gloucester will be on the box waiting for us. And he was very involved in this exercise, this maneuver. The Duke of Gloucester is dead now, he was the King's brother. Mm-hmm. He was a military man with a military moustache, you know, and he wasn't one of the most popular of the royal family either, you know, he was a sourpuss really. Duke of Gloucester, everybody remembered him. And here he was, well, he was military, and he was marching down the Dallon-Girard. Exhausted, at the trail, infantry, pipes on the motorbike. But I remember him marching down, you know, the early hours of the morning, about 5:30, and there was the old Duke of Gloucester on his box, taking the salute. Get a man in the grave, why? Fight! No! And he's there, you see. And so the whole thing passed him.